Thank you for the organizers of having me, and thank you for being here. So my name is Nabil Tahani. I'm presenting actually two works, so you'll have discount today. You'll have 2-for-1, but they are like they are linked. Actually, you'll see that they are linked. They are both joint work with Chris Robinson, who is my colleague at York University in School of Admin Studies. So as I said, the talk will consist actually on of two papers, separate papers, but they will actually be around the same kind of idea. The first one is has this funny title of Sustainable Retirement Income for the Socialite, the Gardener, and the Uninsured. It actually extends the literature on the post-retirement research that has been done. Especially, it actually extends to have a consumption as stochastic variable. We found that actually the work that was done before, many of the researchers actually have assumed that the consumption was a constant in real term. So we try to have it random and actually have it stochastic, and we'll see what actually will happen. So this is a post-retirement kind of model. This is the second one is freedom at 55 or drudgery till 70. Is it actually a pre-retirement paper? So this one will tell us we are retired now. I have a lump of I have a sum of money now. How can I spend it so that I don't actually outlive it? And this one will tell us, okay, if I set my goal to have $1 million by 65 when I retire, how can I reach that goal? By allocating between the fixed income and the equity, and by also taking into account stochastic savings. We found also that in the literature, many researchers actually have assumed that savings were constant. It's a bit actually restrictive, so we tried also to make it stochastic, and we'll see actually that we will get a very simple model as well. Both models are analytical, so there is no simulation behind them, so they are very fast, and we find that they are also accurate to some extent, just like any other model. So the first paper actually, what motivated us is that the most important and difficult question to ask is how much money can I spend when I am in retirement so that I don't outlive my money, okay? And this is what we will try to do. So far, the typical and the basic model is to assume a date of death, like a fixed deterministic date of death, to assume a rate of return, could be stochastic depending on like a mixture between fixed income and equity, and also a fixed spending amount. Here is the problem, is that we could live longer. I mean, we've been hearing the first two talks about longevity risk. We can actually earn a lower rate of return, so you cannot just assume a rate of return and keep it constant for the whole life. And we have altogether here, we have different spending patterns, okay? I may need more money to travel. I may need more money for my drugs. I may need more money for my child education. So we have different needs. We have different patterns. And we'll try to some extent to kind of model all patterns that we could. Unfortunately, we cannot do all of them, but we will see that we can do a bit actually on this side here. There is a rich literature on this question, but what we found, as I said, is that a lot of research was done using experiments and simulations, and we know to some extent that simulating could be actually cumbersome. You have to simulate many scenarios, and it takes time actually to get an accurate value. So if we could overcome this slowness, we can actually get, say, a better result or an accurate result, that would be actually fine. So just to cite a few of the researchers, Bengen 94, Ho, Milevsky and Robinson in 94, Kuleyel 98, Pai 2000, Geren 2004, all actually have worked on this question here. They assumed constant consumption rate, and they did it by experiment and by simulation. The results were that, okay, generally speaking, people should actually spend between 4% and 6% of their retirement lump sum to outlive, actually not to outlive their money. So 4-6% is pretty much the spending rate that at which actually they could get a good retirement without outliving the money. What actually pushed us in this direction was the work by Milevsky and Robinson in 2005. They overcome, they were actually the first to overcome this simulation problem to have this the speed in getting a result, and they were able to develop what they called a probability of ruin in analytical form, in like closed form solution, and it was very easy. Actually, it was done in Excel. Okay, ours also will be done in Excel, so nothing fancy about software. It takes a few cells, a click, and you get the result, and so they did it. The only thing that actually we will improve on their work is to get the consumption rate stochastic as well. They assumed it to be constant. We assume that it will be stochastic. And fortunately, we get the same kind of analytical solution, I would say. Okay? So this is what we will be doing. I will try to keep the math very low, though I do have some equations. I will try to give the intuition behind the equations rather than the mathematical details. So in this paper, we assume three stochastic variables. The first one is obviously the rate of return. As is, it's done in finance, we assume geometric Brownian motion. So it's just, I would say, a big monster that is used widely in financial markets to model the rate of returns on equity. It could be actually a mixture between fixed income and equity. We also need a variable for the date of death. We don't assume something deterministic, we assume something stochastic. And in the paper, we will use the exponential actually mortality rate. We did some results, also numerical results, using Gompers and Gompers McKeham, but we will just focus on the exponential for now. And the third variable that actually was kept constant so far in the previous works is the stochastic rate of consumption. We will also assume that it's geometric Brownian motion that could be correlated with return. The idea with for correlation is that if you're doing good in the market, you could probably afford to consume more. If you're doing bad in the market, you probably have to reduce your consumption. So we needed this correlation, not a big value. To some extent, consumption has a big fixed part of it. I mean, everyone has to eat. Everyone has to send his kids to school, to college, and so on. So the correlation cannot take on very large values. I think the highest one that we will see is 10%, just a number out of hat. But I don't think there is a very big variability in the correlation in the consumption, so that the correlation is very very small. So what are the benefits of having an analytic approach? Just like Milevsky and Robinson said in 2005, it's fast. Okay, as I said, it's just the click. Put in the numbers in Excel and you will have the value. There is no simulation behind it. It's accurate. We could check actually we could assess the results using a Monte Carlo simulation and find that the results are quite similar. And it's easy to implement. If I have the time and Excel works here, I will definitely show you one example on the Excel spreadsheet actually we use to produce the results, and you will see that it's very easy to implement. Okay, so this is probably I will have probably a few slides, like two slides with mathematical formulas, but that's it for each paper. We follow Milevsky and Robinson in what they call the SPV, or the stochastic present value. We all know what the present value is. So stochastic just means that we have stochastic variables and that our present value is not deterministic, it's not known. And like any stochastic variable, we cannot know it for sure. What we can know is its probability distribution. And if I know the probability distribution, I can compute the expectation, the expected value, I can compute the standard deviation, I can actually compute any other moment that I need. Okay? So this is what we will do. So this SPV, it's simply the consumption that you will consume at time t over an interval dt, small interval of time, discounted, and you see this R here is the rate of return. So dividing by RT is to discount the consumption to today. So hence the present value part of the name, and stochastic again because we have stochastic variables. The date of death is not known, so you see that here is T tilde. We don't know what this is. We'll have to assume that it's an exponential mortality kind of date of death, so we will have an exponential rate of mortality, but that will come later. So this SPV is simply the integral of this discounted consumption rate. Okay? What I mean by geometric Brownian motions is known to probably many of you here. It's simply that the return has a drift. Actually, the return divided, dr divided by r, has drift and has a Brownian component with sigma, sigma being the volatility. We'll assume that sigma is constant, though probably a more realistic model would have sigma stochastic as well, but we'll keep things simple here. We assume also that the consumption, as I said, is geometric Brownian motion, okay? So it has a drift negative alpha, where usually alpha is positive, okay? So this is just to show that, I would say, the normal case is that consumption decreases over time because you need less and less, I don't know, when I will age, probably I would go less to theaters, I would travel less. But also, we don't actually forget that some of us will need actually negative alpha, in which case consumption actually will increase because I will need more money for my drugs, I will need more money for my health problems, and so on. Okay? So we will keep alpha here as negative alpha. So alpha could be, in most cases, probably positive, but in some cases could be positive as well. We have beta here as the stochastic volatility for consumption, and the correlation between the two geometric Brownian motion, between the consumption and the rate of return, we call it rho, okay? So it's constant correlation here. This model actually allows for, it's very flexible and allows for many patterns that we actually see in real life, not all of them, unfortunately. But just by changing the value of alpha here and beta, so for example, this one is deterministic, which means that the beta is zero. It's simply that the consumption will decrease at a rate of 10%, okay, continuously. And this case here where alpha is 4%, but also beta is 10%. So there is some volatility around the consumption rate. Just to show you that it's very flexible, you could have these two patterns of spending, okay? So this one just, it's exponential decreasing, okay? Someone that will need less and less money with no oscillation, with no volatility. And more realistically, it will should probably look like this one here. It's still decreasing, okay? The trend is still decreasing, but probably for some years I will need more, and for some years I would need less. And this actually is the work of beta, okay? Beta 10% give you this. You could have alpha negative, as I said, for someone who would have actually more need to consume at later age, okay? So it's very flexible rather than having a constant consumption that would have a flat line here. You could have these two patterns at least in the model. Okay, usually in finance, you go from the model, what we call the geometric Brownian motion, and actually we can solve it, okay? So I will forget the details. They are simple for those who know them. Probably they don't seem or look easy for the others. We can solve for RT and CT, okay? We can have them in, I would say, like diffusion, you know, formula, except that the stochastic part of them, BT here and ZT here, actually forbids us from saying what are the exact values for RT and CT. They are not known. They are random, okay? So the only thing that we can say is that this has a log normal distribution and this has a log normal distribution, so we can play with the probabilities. That's it, okay? What we need, it's not these two variables separately, but together. Remember, our SPV formula means that the consumption is discounted at the rate of return. So we will actually, we can show, it's shown in the appendix, it's very simple math for those in financial engineering or just, you know about the financial models. You could show that CT minus 1 RT, so I would say the inverse of the discounted consumption is, again, could have the same probability distribution as a geometric Brownian motion with this mu bar and sigma bar given as function of the previous parameters. So basically what I'm seeing here is that in Milevsky and Robinson work, Ct was constant, okay? So actually it could just go outside the integral here, it's just a constant. Rt was a geometric Brownian motion as well with mu and sigma. What I'm saying is that even if you add stochastic component to the consumption rate, you can still have a geometric Brownian motion, except that now you don't have mu and sigma, you have mu bar and sigma bar being these two values here. Okay? So exactly the same idea behind Milevsky and Robinson can be applied just with different drift and with different stochastic, with different volatility. Okay? And these are the drift and the volatility. And the main result that was due to one of Moshe's paper in 97 is that you could approximate the probability distribution of the stochastic present value. The whole idea is to calculate the probability, and I see that it's, let me just try to have this here. Okay. I do have two things here. Okay, they should not be in this order, but at least they are visible now. So I said the idea is to calculate the probability of running out of money. So my stochastic prism value, okay, will have to be enough for me to spend for my retirement years. And I cannot say what this SPV will be. I can only say what are my chances of running out of money or not. Okay. So the whole idea is to have the distribution. We cannot have the distribution, the exact distribution of SPV, but we can have an approximation. And as I said, this is due to one of Moshe's work. And this approximation is the reciprocal gamma distribution. It basically says that the probability, the chance that your SPV is higher than what you need, okay, it's given actually by this gamma distribution, where alpha bar, beta bar are simply parameters based on our previous parameters here. Okay? And this little distribution gamma dist here, this is actually how it's implemented in Excel. You just have to give these two values, your consumption rate, and you'll have your probability of ruin or probability of survival. Okay? Basically. How good is this approximation? Well, just like any approximation, it's not perfect, okay? But it does a great job, okay? For normal values, I would say the gamma distribution or the reciprocal gamma distribution does a good job. It's fast, faster than PDE solving, faster than simulation. Am I correct, Moshe, to say that? Especially for simulation, that's for sure. PDE, it's probably an open question here. But it is fast. As I said, for the time of death, we assume an exponential mortality rate, lambda fixed here. And so this is your probability, okay? So this is your probability of having your SPV higher than your wealth.
Do you have any parameter restrictions so that the integral converges on alpha and beta?
We do have, actually we run just by trying few parameters. The gamma distribution actually doesn't give you any value for sum of alpha and beta bar, I would say. And that's the limit, actually. You will play with it and you'll see that sometimes this alpha beta bar actually doesn't allow you to use the gamma distribution. And this is probably one of the limits of the reciprocal gamma in this case here. Okay? So this is the model, this is the result. Now, how we apply it, we try to have three types of patterns spanning. So the socialite, I would say it's the pure deterministic constant one. He or she will stays actually at constant spending, Asian or not Asian, she will still go to theater, she will still eat at fancy restaurants, the same thing, so constant. Alpha equals zero, beta equals zero, and no correlation, obviously. We would have the gardener, the one that probably would look like any common person here, is the need for food, the need for clothing, the need for entertainment will decrease over time, so that we will need an alpha positive. Remember, it's decreasing because of negative alpha. We would have beta higher than zero, could have no volatility. Actually, I will show you some numbers, but realistically, you should have beta actually more than zero, and you could have also some correlation, probably positively correlated, so that you could have this. And the uninsured, this is probably the less lucky of the three types here. It's someone who will need more money because of the cost of ill health, for drugs, for medication, for so on. So for this one, we will have a negative alpha, and again, positive beta, and positive correlation, okay? We will assume a balanced portfolio earning 4% real per annum and with standard deviation of 14%. These are not the same numbers Milevsky and Robinson used. I guess it was 7 and 20%. We just felt that probably 4 and 14% are much more realistic now, especially now, I would say, even probably less. We should probably lessen the earnings and increase the volatility. But again, these are just numbers. The idea is that what we will see will change with numbers, obviously, but the relative comparison between patterns will stay the same. So the findings, we found that person who retired in normal age range 60-65 cannot sustain an initial consumption rate more than 4%. So this is like the general rule. You would say, well, this actually was found before us. Yes. We're just using a more realistic model. So if we can assess the same results using a more realistic model, it gives us probably more weight. Okay? That being said, this is the general, I would say, normal person. But for the different cases, for the different spending patterns we've seen, you could actually either lower your consumption, or you can afford actually to consume more, depending on where you are. And this is what we find. We find that the socialite cannot sustain a rate of more than 3%, so someone who will needs to keep constant spending after over the retirement age will need to consume less than 3%. The uninsured cannot sustain an initial rate of more than 2%, remember, because he will need more spending for his health problems. The wildly optimistic case here, and everything here actually is in the tables. I didn't want to put the tables because they are big and with a lot of numbers. I will invite you actually to see them in the paper. The wild optimistic case here, the gardener may be able to sustain a consumption of 6%, but this means that you would have, I think we use 7% and 20% as standard deviation, 7% for the return rate, and something like probably 4% and 10% volatility for the gardener here. We found not only one, I would call it weird result. We didn't actually expect it, though Chris actually had a bit of explanation on that. We found that when we add the stochastic component, like when you add beta, so going from beta equals zero to say 10%, you should expect that the probability of ruin will increase at all rates. It's just like when I saw it, I thought of volatility. When volatility goes up, option prices go up because you would have probability of being in or out of money at the same time. What we found is that actually having the stochastic component increases the risk at low rates and decreases it at higher rates. So which means that someone who is consuming, say, around 3%, by making the stochastic, the volatility going up, he would have, you will increase the probability of ruin. And for someone, for example, who is consuming, say, 20 or 30%, you will lower the probability of ruin. How Chris actually explained it, though I don't know if it's if it does fit or it's just due to probably the approximation itself, I don't know. It's that it's like an option. So for example, who is at high risk, so someone who is consuming a large amount of money, when you like when you have an option, the downside cannot hurt you, the upside can only actually make it better. Okay? And for someone who is lower risk, so consuming less, like 2-3%, it's like when you see the tail of the normal distribution. Well, there is more chance to go right than left. So actually you'll be increasing the probability rather than decreasing it because it's already low. So this is a bit of the explanation we found. You could see it here. This is the only two pictures actually I will see, show you here. This is, so this different colors here stand for different betas, for different volatilities. And you see that for the higher rates, the highest volatility gives a lower probability of ruin. And I just zoomed in here. So what you see here is just zoom in here. And you see that for lower consumption rates, the highest the volatility, the highest the probability of ruin. Okay? There is an inflection point around 4.4%, 4.5%, depending on the parameters. So this is probably the weirdest finding we found. The last thing, we also actually analyzed the sensitivity to the correlation coefficient. We found that there is an inflection point, but we find that actually, though it affects the probability of ruin, but not by a great deal, which means that if you are at more than 10% of running out of money, having the correlation doesn't make you go below 10%. You will stay around 10% as well. So actually, it's not a big deal, but again, these are just numbers we're using. So what I should probably keep from this is that we are proposing a much more realistic model in the sense that we are making the consumption a stochastic variable, whereas the previous literature actually had assumed that the consumption was constant. We find that you still can have an analytical approximation that is fast and accurate, and the findings is that more likely people cannot consume more than 4%, but again, depending on your spending pattern, you can afford to consume more, or you have to actually reduce your consumption to and consume less, depending on the three patterns we analyzed. There is still some research to be done, and we would love to pursue it, though we've been swamped by other things as of now. Two things that we needed, actually, we need, I think three things, actually, that could probably improve or at least assess the results better, is that we usually have data for interest rates, we do have data for return on equity, we do have data on mortality. We couldn't find data on consumption. So what we could actually, what we should do, if we can have access to longitudinal data on consumption, like, I don't know, from credit card companies or from banks, we can actually estimate the parameters for the consumption model in a more accurate way. Here we just, you know, plug in numbers like 4% for alpha and 10% for beta and rho. But if we could have like an evidence-based kind of numbers, that would be great. The other research avenue would be to add two patterns. One, I think that could be, I think it could be just actually analyzed using what we have done so far. We call it the explorer. So someone actually who has saved a lot of money before retirement, and he will just spend all his money during retirement, traveling, having fun, and so on. So that I think can be analyzed. The other pattern, and this one is quite of problematic, is someone with a true disaster situation like sudden illness, okay, like you're retired and you just, you know, you're ill and you have a lot of costs, a lot of spending. So this actually can be modeled using a jump process in the consumption, but again, if you put a jump process in the consumption, there is no guarantee that you will kind of, you know, find the same simple solution to this problem. You'll probably have to go through solving PDE or whatever other techniques actually exist, but it's actually worth thinking about it. The other point, the third one, actually was suggested by one of the referees. He said, why don't you use mean reversion consumption? At first, we thought that we don't have any evidence, actually, that consumption should be mean reversion. But then we gave it a second thought, and we said, probably, I don't know, if you try to consume more and say find that you probably will run out of money, you kind of reduce your consumption. And when you reduce it and you find that you have enough money, you can probably increase it. So mean reversion could probably be more realistic. We started actually working on it. We were blocked, and just out of the sudden, yesterday I was writing the slides for this presentation. I was heading to York to teach at night, and I was just, you know, doing some equations on the paper. And one idea came actually to my mind, so I think we can have the same simple kind of stuff with mean reversion consumption here. So I will let you know when it's done. So this is the first talk, and I guess I still have 15 minutes, don't you? This is the first talk, so this is the post-retirement. So now, what about the pre-retirement? The money that I will spend in my retirement age, I have to save it now, okay? And this is what the paper is about, is how much money must be saved and how much the savings should be allocated between fixed and income and equity. And again, this is based on one of Milevsky's and Robinson's work in 96 or 97. They assumed a constant saving, okay? So they assumed that you have lump sum at the beginning, initial endowment, and you save, say, $10,000 per year for 20 or 30 years, depending when you want to retire. And they try to say how much equity you should have in your portfolio and how much fixed income you should have in your portfolio. Not only that, but can you actually get the probability of reaching the goal and all the stuff like the expected wealth at the end, the standard deviation, and so on. They were able to do it. Except that, again, they assumed that the savings were constant, and the result was very simple. The result is still very simple here as well, okay? By assuming stochastic savings, just like stochastic consumption, now you save stochastically. So as I said, it's based on actually two works, Ho, Milevsky, and Robinson, 95, 96. I forgot about Clark Ho and... So they have also an analytical solution, and we try to have the same thing here. By analogy to the SPV, the stochastic present value, we will use something called the stochastic future value. Okay? Rather than discounting the consumption, I will compound the savings to a future date. Now the date is known. Okay? You know when you want to retire, or approximately. So I would say at 65. So it's not like a date of death, which is unknown. So here we don't need any variable for the time. We need two variables, the rate of return and the savings as well. And for both, we assume stochastic geometric Brownian motion. And the SFV, the stochastic future value, what was done, and for some reason, was actually kind of a flaw in the previous work, in Ho et al. Work, is that the savings year per year were discounted at the risk-free rate, added to the initial endowment, and then invested in the equity portfolio, like the mix, the fixed income. So one of the questions I asked Chris is that why did you discount at the risk-free the savings while actually you should invest them like alpha in equity and 1 minus alpha in fixed income? So I cannot discount them at the fixed rate. So what we did here is that you see here inside the integral is that ST is the savings at time t. It's discounted at the stochastic rate of return, which is a mixture of fixed income and equity, to zero, and then added to W being the initial wealth, and everything is compounded at RT until time capital T. Okay? So we don't actually use the risk-free here to discount the savings. So as I said, geometric Brownian motion for all variables. V here stands for the risky asset. So R, as a return, will be part in V and part in the fixed income, so that this drift here will be 1 minus alpha in the risk-free asset or the fixed income asset, and alpha, which is the allocation, the equity allocation, will be in the risky asset here, okay? The volatility, sigma tilde here, will be just alpha times sigma here. And we assume the same kind of process for savings. Here we assume a positive eta for, I would say, most of us, is that you save more and more when you're closer to retirement. But again, nothing forbids from taking eta negative, which means that you reduce your savings year after year, okay, for some reason. We still have a correlation between the return and the savings here. So we have to do, well, two or three things here. One is finding the optimal alpha that maximizes the probability of reaching the goal, and getting this probability, and also if we could find the expected value of wealth at the end and the standard deviation, we could measure the riskiness of the strategy. Okay, so this is what we'll try to do. And again, these two or three equations here solve to this one here. So again, it's log normal process for RT, log normal for ST. And we're trying to have alpha hat, which is the optimal value, that would maximize the probability of reaching the goal, goal being G, fixed, constant, like $1 million or 500,000, whatever, over the next 25 or 30 years, depending on your retirement. Okay? The problem is that the equation, when you solve, remember, see here, we have a part of the return alone, like the initial wealth, and we have a product here between the savings discounted and then compounded. The problem is that we used to have only one part, only the integral in the previous paper. Here we have two. And unfortunately, this has no closed form solution for the probability distribution. Just like when you're adding log normal distributions, you cannot have an exact distribution. What actually we found is that, thanks to Asian option literature, you could see this as a sum of log normals, so you can apply both kind of approximation of the Asian option literature, like log normal, like the reciprocal gamma, and like many others. Okay? So again, we cannot have an exact distribution, we can have an approximation. And what we will use here is simply the log normal one, though reciprocal gamma can also be done easily. We just use the log normal. These are what we call, this kind of approximation is what we call moment matching based approximation, which means that you calculate the true moments and you try to duplicate them using the approximative distribution. So we need two moments for the log normal distribution. We needed these two moments, and here they are. Your SFV can be solved this way, and your first moment is given here, your second moment is given here, where all the little A's here are given here. So it's, well, probably the formula looks kind of scary, but it's not actually simple, multiplication, exponentials, and so on. So nothing very fancy, no integrals, no nothing. So here you are. So you have your moments, you try to match them with the log normal, and what you find is that your probability of reaching the goal, it's simply 1 minus n, n being the standard normal commutative distribution function, so something easy to find in Excel, for example, with logarithm g being the goal. A and b are two parameters that depend on the first and the second moment, and they are given here. Okay? And so if you can maximize this probability, you will get the optimal allocation alpha. You will get your probability of reaching the goal. Since it's also an approximation for the distribution, you can get the expected value and the standard deviation. Okay? So all the moments we needed, E1 and E2 here are given. So this is what we will use. And as I said, you can use the reciprocal gamma. In fact, reciprocal gamma was found to be a much more accurate approximation for Asian options than the log normal. Okay? But just to keep it simple, we are using the log normal here. So we take few numbers just to show you how it's done. We have a basic model here with numbers. We took the rate parameters and drift and the standard deviation, so on, from the book by Ho and Robinson in personal finance. We assume that we have a couple aged about 40 who wants to retire at age 65. They have actually 100,000 now and needs to save for 500,000 in 25 years. Okay? So how will the deterministic model do? How will Milevsky-Ho and Robinson model do? And how actually our model will do as well? We'll see in a few slides. So these are the numbers, and we will use some variations from these numbers here. So what we find here is that, for example, deterministic solution, which means that you just pick a number for the return, you know, equity and fixed income, like a mixture, and compound your initial wealth and compound your savings, keep them constant, and see if you reach your goal. Okay? What it's found here is that if your equity allocation is 0%, there's no way you could achieve your 500,000 goal. At 50, which is a balanced portfolio, yes, you can. At 90, yes, you can buy a much greater number. The problem with this is, I mean, we know we've been through the crisis, we're still in, is that you cannot just assume numbers, anything can happen. What is the probability of this not being? I mean, you can say, yes, it's deterministic, but is it like 10% chance of failing, or is it failing, or is it 30% or 40%? This is what actually lacks here. And both HMR, Ho, Milevsky and Robinson, and the one we're presenting gives you this probability. This gives you this extra step of what is the chance of getting this goal or not. Okay? So with HMR model, you find that you have 71% chance if you allocate 77% to equity. With our model, it's 85 allocation and 68 probability. The numbers are close, though again, remember the flaw in the HMR model is that they discounted savings with the risk-free rate. But this is the only comparison we will have after we will use stochastic savings, so there is no comparison between the two models. When you add stochastic variable in the model, you see here between 5,000 and 9,500, you see all kind of allocations here and all kind of probability of reaching that goal. Okay, you have also the expected value and the standard deviation. So, for example, our financial planner who will say to the client, well, at 90% with 563% rate of return, you'll be good. Well, here you have this probability of failing. Even at, you know, with 7,000, keeping the 7,000 that we have here, you have 32% of failing, which is big. Okay? So you cannot just say, okay, it's yes, you can reach this goal, but okay, forgive me, you still have 32% chances of failing. Show this table to soon to be retirees, or the one who will be in 25, 30 years from now, you would probably should be in the last three columns here, which is your probability of reaching the goal should be at least like 80%, like just to make it sure it will actually be the case. These numbers here are not good at all. Okay, 32% chance of failing, it's a big problem. Just 2 minutes and I will be done. We also run a simulation here just by increasing, actually keeping beta nil, like deterministic, but increasing rather than constant, and by having a beta positive here. The only thing that I will say is that this is more realistic because you allow for beta to be positive as well. We found that, and it's not actually that weird like the previous result, is that you could, usually you say that when you believe, you expect that when you increase the drift, when you increase the rate of return somehow, you expect that your allocation should actually decrease to equity. Okay? We found that a mixture of value for eta and beta, which is the drift and the volatility of the savings, could make it actually that the allocation to equity increased from 33% to 37%. But it's actually kind of expected. Why? Because though you increase the rate, the drift, you increase the volatility as well. So this mixture of values could make it that you need more money in equity to make it sure it happens. Okay? And the last table, just to show you what savings level would I have or should I have is needed for our 40-year-old couple to reach their goal by 65. So we have the deterministic and the stochastic savings here, and we run it for different savings amounts, 7,000, 10,000, 12, and 15,000. With the deterministic here, you see that even at 10,000, you are slightly above the goal here, okay? At 12,000, you're completely above the goal. But again, this is purely deterministic. No one can say what are the chances of reaching these goals. If you use, I would say, conservative numbers here, eta 2% and beta only 4%, where with a correlation of 10%, even at 10,000, you still have 36% chance to fail. Okay? Even at 15, well, at 15, you are close to the perfect number here, but you need only to allocate for 10% in equity, rather than probably here it's like 50-50 or whatever for the deterministic case. So in other words, the model is still tractable, it's still easy to use, it's more realistic. Still some research can be done to further improve the paper, especially getting, I would say, realistic numbers for the parameters. Again, our problem is that eta and beta are just out of the hat. We don't have any evidence of picking these numbers. If we could have data, we can probably estimate them, we can infer them. And the second one is also to integrate a jump process in the savings. Just like consumption, sometimes you could just have, I don't know, the mortgage is paid, you just increase your savings because it's paid. Your daughter is married, you paid for the wedding, she's gone, you can increase the savings as well. Or you could actually just reduce them because suddenly you have more spending, more consumption. Okay? So thank you very much.